That's because they chose.
Sorry, I have a camera at Andy's house. So.
Andy doesn't seem to be laughing about that.
No, I'm aware of it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there he is. Likes to watch the cats.
It keeps him happy.
Yeah. However, I really don't like it when you reenact that scene from Silence of the Lambs where, you know, you're... Well, never mind. I mean, just stop playing Wild Horses. I don't want to, you know, stand in front of the mirror. I don't want to see that.
Would you frack me? I'd frack me hard.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Welcome to Listen to the Prophets, in which we discover the goodies nestled within Deep Space Nine, the most underrated Star Trek show since Enterprise. I am J. David Weider, and that laugh you hear to my metaphorical right is Mr. Andrew Leyland, Sir Andrew Leyland.
Hello, everybody.
And to Andy's right is Mr. Dr. Bill Robinson.
So, wait a minute.
Mr. Doctor.
Mr. Doctor? Dr. Mr.?
Yeah.
Mr.
Kyrie eleison down the road.
Sorry, never mind.
Finally, but not least, is Paul Spataro, Esquire.
Hello, everybody.
Not one San Dimas High School football rules? Come on.
Huh?
It's a Bill and Ted reference.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, it takes me a while. It's
actually.
Do they know that it's 6 o'clock in the morning when we start recording?
It's 5 o'clock when I start. What have you got?
Do they know it's Christmas after all?
Yes.
Thank you,
actually,
Bob,
it's not
Gilmore.
Christmas. It's actually February 22nd. 2019. Did you know that?
Actually, it's October 27th, but...
Bill.
You just destroyed the illusion.
Illusion. Actually, Paul, aren't you an Esquire anyway?
I am an Esquire, actually.
Yeah, that's why... Yeah,
I'm the only one who doesn't have a made-up title. I hate to break this to you, but you're really not a doctor.
What?
What?
I'm not a mister? Oh.
It is February 27th.
Andy, to my knowledge, Andy has not been knighted.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. They see, you could still hold out hope. There's a chance that one day you will be Sir Andrew Leyland. There's really no chance at all that Bill will ever truly be Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hey. He may get an honorary doctorate from Florida University.
Yeah.
And why are they giving him that?
Because it's Florida and they really don't give
you know what? Actually, Bill, if you donate your body to science, they might give you an honorary doctorate. Just a thought.
Yeah, but then he richly would be bones.
They're just fat.
You know, thinking about that, I don't like that they changed the reason for the name Bones.
I don't. I like that it was a reference to Sawbones, the little cowboy thing. I think because that fitted more in with Wagon Train to the Stars.
Yes, and that was I've heard Dr. McCoy say that. So why do we have to have all she left me with was my bones?
Maybe it's just
because it's a clunky piece of dialogue.
Piece of dialogue. And it says to me that J.J. Abrams did not know that it was Sawbones.
J.J. Abrams probably didn't, but Alex, what's his face, and Robert Orkey should have done.
Should have, didn't.
I thought it was just a good joke.
Sorry to go off on a tangent before we even start.
Well, no, we've been on a tangent. I just thought it was a nice, funny bit of a joke and a reference to some obscure continuity.
We apparently not recover.
Make sure
any Star Trek news for us?
I have Star Trek news.
Oh.
We do?
If you guys haven't heard, and this will be common knowledge by the time this episode airs on February 22nd, but maybe they announced a new Star Trek animated series.
Below Decks.
Lower Decks.
Lower
Isn't
Decks.
Is it supposed to be a comedy or something?
Yes, an animated comedy.
Don't we already have the Orville?
That's what I thought, too.
I'm going to tell you that, first of all, that the Orville is not produced by the Star Trek people.
Second really? Of all, you could have fooled me.
As much as it seems like Star Trek, it's not. When do we start second season on Orville?
I don't know.
December.
Okay, so that will have aired by the time this airs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought this was an interesting thought that they're going to do an animated comedy series.
Dave's gonna have to edit this. Hold on, sorry. It started in December. There you go.
Oh yeah, time travel.
Yeah. Carry on, Paul. Sorry.
There you go. And you know Dave is not editing that. He's sleeping it in. Because he's a very naughty boy.
If you get me bold, I'll leave it in.
Like I said, I thought it was a pretty bold move on their part, though, to really go with something very, very different from anything they've ever done, to boldly go where no one has gone before with an animated comedy.
Except Star Wars, with Tag and Beat.
Yeah,
which
I mean, as
comics,
long as it's not exactly like Rick and Morty.
As long as it's not exactly what?
Like Rick and Morty.
Yeah, well, it is being produced by the same people.
I'm sorry, it does nothing for me, Rick and Morty. I've tried watching it, and I'm like, why is this kid traveling with this drunken asshole?
I've never seen it, so I can't comment.
You know, I've never seen it either, but I've heard the same thing. Oh, it's so great. And I'm just like, you know what? Maybe I'm getting too old. I don't have time. There's not enough time left to get into everything that comes out anymore. I can't do it.
You've basically become Roger
Murtaugh.
I tried
a couple on Netflix, and it did not float my boat. Okay, let's do a synopsis for whatever the hell this episode is.
What episode are we doing, Dave?
This episode is By Inferno's Light.
The Federation's fiercest conflict.
Power to phasers.
Will be decided.
It's time. I am ready.
By a single confrontation. On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Which was the 15th episode of Season 5. We're almost halfway through, more than halfway through Season 5. This bad boy was directed by Les Landau, written by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf, and this would have aired on or about February 17th, 1997. Bill, where were you on February 17th, 1997?
Oh.
Fair enough. I'd be impressed if you did know. So, picking up from the cliffhanger of last episode, the Dominion fleet momentarily pauses and faces off with DS9, the Defiant, several runabouts, and Guldakot in his Bird of Prey. The fleet then heads to Cardassian space, and Dukat's Bird of Prey is following them. Now, you would think he's trying to make a heroic gesture. No. Basically, Dukat informs them that secretly he's been negotiating to join the Dominion for several months now, and they've accepted Cardassia as a member, and Dukat is the leader of the new government. We should have saw that one coming. At the internment camp, the prisoners are told of Cardassia's new allegiance, and all Cardassian prisoners at the camp are set free. Not so fast, Garrick, because he's told he's going to remain in the prison because it's, Guldakot, and he's going to be a dick. Dukat himself appears in a video transmission to all of Cardassia and pledges to expel Klingons and Maquis from Cardassian space and reclaim all that was lost. Basically his car keys. And Garrick begins work on modifying the transmitter to contact the runabout in orbit over the internment camp, and Worf is selected as an opponent for Jem'Hadar practice hand-to-hand combat. Combat! He is matched first against the youngest and least experienced of them, but he's scoring some nice victories. Eventually, he is defeated.
Klingon combat!
Meanwhile, Dukat has kept his promise to expel the Klingons, and they end up on DS9, where Gowron comes aboard to meet with Sisko. Sisko suggests they join to fight the real enemy, the Dominion, and Gowron agrees to reinstate the Khitomer Accords. At the camp, Worf's subsequent Jem'Hadar opponents have become successively older and more experienced, yet he continues to be victorious. Garrick begins to suffer from claustrophobia, and Bashir suspects that he will be unable to complete the transmitter modifications. Worf returns to the cell from a day of fighting, and Bashir tells him he's several broken ribs, and along with Martok, encourages him to stop fighting. Worf's refusal to give up inspires Garrick to overcome his fears and return to work. Meanwhile, the station crew are awaiting reinforcements and trying to locate the changeling in their midst. Could be the Doctor. Doctor. Dukat contacts Sisko and encourages him to persuade the Federation to join the Dominion. Sisko refuses, and Dukat reminds him that he wanted to reclaim all that was lost in Cardassian territory, which includes Deep Space Nine, as it was built by Cardassians, but Sisko points out it was actually Bajoran slave labor. Nothing there, Bill?
I'm trying to be nice.
Okay. Ignoring Dukat, Sisko...
That's new and different.
Ignoring Dukat, Sisko deploys the Defiant and the runabouts to fight the oncoming joint Cardassian-Dominion fleet. The changeling Bashir is on one of the runabouts, having incapacitated the crew. O'Brien detects a fleet of ships decloaking, and the crew is shocked to discover Romulan warbirds instead of the expected Dominion fleet. The Romulans ask for permission to join the Federation Klingon fleet, and Sisko says, hell yeah! He doesn't say that. He agrees with it. Back at the internment camp, as Worf is fighting the Jem'Hadar commander, three Jem'Hadar enter the cell and question the prisoners about the whereabouts of Garrick, who has not been seen for some time. They discover the loose panels and come close to discovering Garrick when the prisoners successfully overpower their guards. In the combat ring, Worf is clearly defeated but refuses to yield. The commander of the Jem'Hadar, whose name I can't pronounce, there you go. Yeah, that guy. Is impressed by Worf's determination to fight and what ultimately would be his death. So he himself yields, saying that he can't defeat Worf, only kill him. And he's just not interested in that. And this enrages the Vorta, who orders the immediate execution of both of them. As the troops turn their guns to Worf, Garak manages to engage the transmitter, and they are beamed away to the orbiting runabout at the last second along with a Romulan captive. Once on the runabout, the real Bashir sends an urgent message to DS9, while Changeling Bashir is on a runabout carrying the bomb, which he intends to detonate inside the sun, causing a supernova that would incinerate DS9, Bajor, Combined Starfleet, Klingon, Romulan forces. Oh my.
Was it a champagne supernova? In the sky?
In the sky. The Defiant engages warp drive within solar system and pulls up alongside the runabout and engages the tractor beam, pulling the runabout away from the sun at the last minute. The bomb explodes, destroying the runabout and Changeling Bashir. Suddenly, the approaching Dominion fleet disappears from the sensors, and the crew realize that the fleet was never there. They're still at Cardassia, and the Changeling has been broadcasting fake warp signatures. Garak, Worf, Bashir, and Martok are reunited with their friends and loved ones on the station, and Sisko finalizes the new peace treaty with the Klingons. The revised version calls for a permanent Klingon presence on DS9, and Sisko selects Martok to command those troops. The end. It's all right.
You know, that you made it sound like, yeah, okay.
What did it make it sound like?
Like that the snuff. Defiant pulled up like it was like, hey, buddy, you need a tow?
Well, they did. That's what they did. They
let
pulled
me tow
up
you out of that sun.
They pulled up and they grabbed it. How would you describe it, Bill?
No. It was fine.
How would you have read the Wikipedia synopsis, Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, I would have stumbled a lot on it.
I did.
Itatica. Was that a 70s song? Itatica.
I don't even know what song that is.
I don't even. Me either. It was a disco one.
I was not a disco fan back in the day. I look at it now with some nostalgia, but back in the 1970s, I was very firmly in the rock versus disco rock side.
Rock, paper, scissors?
So I was actually worried.
Back when I was in high school, there was two sides of the cafeteria. There were the rock people who wore flannel shirts and the disco people who wore terry cloth or silk shirts.
Good talk. Yeah, I was worried that this episode wouldn't live up to the cliffhanger, and yet it did. I thought this was a very even-handed episode across the board.
I thought it was chock full of stuff. And as I was watching it, I was thinking, who's got the synopsis this week? I hope it's not me, because it's going to be really long to read.
Yes, and it was.
There was so much that went on in this episode. And I'm going to tell you the one substantive thing that kept coming to mind for me was with regard to Garak, that we've spent five seasons. Now, you know, granted, he hasn't been a main star on the show. He's been a recurring guest star. But we've spent five seasons building him up and building him up to this guy who is seemingly able to do almost anything. And now that he is a beloved character, we throw in a weakness. And we make it so that he's got to overcome something. And I just thought, boy, that's cool. Now, all of a sudden, we threw in claustrophobia, and he's still the only one who can get through this, and he's got to fight it and fight it and fight it. And it just made for such a good – I hate to even call it a subplot because there was so much going on here. I don't know how to distinguish the main plot from the subplot in any situation here. I thought this was just riveting to watch.
Yeah.
Even though I knew everything that was going to happen and I've seen it before, it hasn't lost anything. I hate that I'm giving up my thoughts on it so early. We're not rating the episode yet, but I was on this one every minute of the way. Yeah. I thought this was one of the best episodes.
Not a slog at all.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have much disagreement on this one, to be honest with you. I think it was an absolutely blinding one. It was one of those rare Star Trek two-parters where Part 2 really does fulfill the promise of Part 1. There's a shit ton of stuff going on, yet all the characters are given something to do, which is something that the Next Generation didn't manage all the time, that all the characters are given something wonderful to play with. I think but Worf is the standout for me when he's having the fights with the Jem'Hadar, because over in Next Generation it was always, how do we show that this person is really powerful? Oh, we haven't kicked the shit out of Worf. And here we just see Worf go toe-to-toe with six or seven of these Jem'Hadar soldiers to the point where he wins the respect of the Jem'Hadar soldier that he's monitoring all of this. Mm-hmm. To the point where he's saying, yield. You know, you lose nothing by yielding at this point. You have proven what a warrior you are. And Worf's like, fuck that shit. I am fighting you till I drop. And it's absolutely brilliant. I love Worf in this one because he's just so stoic through the whole thing. It's great. And Worf's really fit in to this show.
Mm-hmm. I also like that Martok is the only one who truly understands him when he's doing all of this. No, leave him. You know, that part. You know, he understands it, that Worf's honor is at stake here. And the only thing about that, and it was only one of the very few things that just made me, I can't even say it's a misstep, it just made me think, would that happen, is the Jem'Hadar have not shown me to be a race that has any honor. And would they actually act that way, or would he be like, you know, we're giving him the honor of the death?
Well, I don't know if it was the Jem'Hadar so much as that one particular Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. But would any of them react that way?
Well, no, because I think the Jem'Hadar are just used to going into battle with people and killing them wholesale. They've never really had an enemy like this. They've never really had an enemy that has made them go, all right, yeah, as an enemy, he's pretty formidable. So I think this is really the first time that they've seen it.
On the other hand, I don't think Martok ever yielded when he was in combat.
He probably wasn't through quite the gauntlet that Worf was.
Yeah, I don't think Gowron essentially did Rocky with Jem'Hadar soldiers in the way that Worf did. And essentially what Worf does Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4 in this one episode.
Thankfully he avoids Rocky 5 because that sucked.
Yeah, he stayed out of the way of Rocky 5. And we've not got to Rocky Balboa yet. So I think it's more of a case of this one particular adversary has earned his respect more than anything else. I don't know that the rest of the Jem'Hadar would care, and they probably wouldn't.
No, they end up killing their general just because he won't finish it.
Yeah.
Certainly the Vorta didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of that was great. I love Kira in this one. The next time I see him, I'm going to kill him, which is just brilliant. We've always liked Kira on this show, mm-hmm. and she seemed to soften a little bit in the midsection. Maybe it was being pregnant. I don't know. Maybe that made her a little kinder towards people. But now she's got the O'Brien baby out of her. She's ready to just go and kick his ass again.
Well, I liked the Gul Dukat heel turn also because he never was truly on their side. You could never trust him, but you didn't know he would go this route. No. I mean, I knew it because I've seen this before, but going into this episode, the first time I saw it, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, well, the thing of this is we're into season 5 now. We're into episodes I have not watched since they originally aired. So some of these surprises are still surprises, even though I have seen them before. And that was a real good plot twist that made you go, ooh, but made perfect sense. It was the best kind of plot heel turn. Because he would think that this was the best thing to do for Cardassia, join forces with the enemy that's coming in that is ultra powerful. And he has that wonderful propaganda speech that he doles out on all the TV screens across Cardassia is absolutely brilliant. I love Mark Alamo. He just relishes all this stuff that he has to say, and he does it really well. And but the most chilling bit about the whole thing for me was when they said, well, what about Zael? And he said, she's made a choice. She's not my daughter anymore. And the fact that he can just turn that off, as simple as that, just proves what a true sociopath this person is. He's absolutely great in this role.
I can just see in the Leyland house, it's Anya, you ready to go to dance? No. Well, she made her choice. She's not my daughter anymore.
she's dead to me now. It's just, and he's, I love Mark Alamo. Everybody's good in this show, though. But especially the rich tapestry of the background characters like him. And yeah, like you said earlier on, Garak is wonderful in this one, trying to get over his claustrophobia as he has to fix what he's fixing. I think the ending beam out was a little bit too convenient, but I didn't care by that point because the rest of the episode and part one was just so damn good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they hadn't built up to that, through the episode and three quarters at that point that we had, that would have been just so stereotypical, unforgivable trope. But they earned so much getting up to that point that the timing was totally acceptable.
Absolutely, yeah. And just saving Worf just as they phaser him.
But at the same time saving the prisoners in the room at the same time, mm-hmm. exactly at the right moment.
But they'd earned it over the previous 40 minutes. You can't say Worf had not earned something after what he went through, and Garak and even Bashir to a certain extent. They were all exceptionally good in this one. And I love Gowron as well. I think Gowron's brilliant. And when he comes back and they reopen the Kittimer Accords, that's really good stuff.
William?
Bill?
I'm here.
Okay. By Bill's light.
By Bill's.
What do you think, Bill? Yeah, you've been silent. Why you hated this one.
I didn't hate this. I didn't hate this at all. I was surprised. So this episode is 20 years removed and from where we are now, but yet some of the, like, a few themes you can see parallels to things that are going on in our current political spectrum, we'll say, especially in Dukat's speech to Sisko, where he says, "What I did to make Cardassia great again." I mean, was that gold to Trump or gold to Dukat? I mean, I know that's a stretch, but and that's not what it was meant to be. But I was like, oh, you know,
You don't think it was meant to figure out what was going to happen 20 years in the future and parody it?
true. But it's, you know, it's interesting that sometimes you can see things that maybe like a timeless quality to it, that, you know, themes that recur throughout actual history and real life. And, you know, no, I'm not taking a stance one way or another before, you know, somebody says, oh, he hates Trump, or oh, he loves Trump, whatever. I'm not getting into that. I'm just
loving Trump.
I'm just making an observation.
It's a good observation. But Star Trek's always been that way. Yes. It has timeless quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say exactly the same thing Dave just said. Star Trek's always looked to history in a way to project that into the future, what's really talking about now. And on the one hand, it's a bit sad that a show from 20 years ago is still speaking to the now. One would have thought.
I don't think it's in the slightest bit sad. I'm sorry.
Well, I think it would have been nice that we'd moved on slightly and we're having different conversations. But I think of all of them, Deep Space Nine's political landscape stands up the best to scrutiny. Mm. Whereas you can look at the original show and Gene's, and particularly The Next Generation, and Gene Roddenberry's slightly naive viewpoint that everything's going to be okay and we're not going to have money and all of that stuff. Whereas Deep Space Nine dances in a much more provocative political arena.
And realistic.
Yeah, and I think an awful lot of Gul Dukat's rhetoric can be applied to what's going on at the moment.
And I think the flip side of the coin is you have Klingons, Federation, and Romulans teaming up against a real enemy. You know it's a real threat when the Romulans like, can we join this fight?
Yeah, but they actually ask.
Yeah.
We know that we've been mortal enemies for about 80 years or so, but, you know, I think we'll join you in this one.
Let's say we help you out a little bit here.
Yeah.
I like the suspense of that, too, where they're just, you know, they're just waiting for the Dominion. And it, you know, it never comes to pass because the Dominion is actually one step ahead of that with their scheme with a thing from another world, Bashir, taking everything out.
And Sisko's actual reaction to that, what they could have accomplished here without firing a single shot is remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know you're dealing with an enemy
and
that's
that
playing
is,
ahead.
I think, well, it shows things on two levels, because one, it's showing just a level of warfare that we haven't seen and we didn't anticipate because they are a level ahead of us. And it's letting us know, you know, this is not going to be a simple war. Just, you know, take off your gloves and fight. You know, you're gonna have to be not only, you know, you're gonna have to be a lot more clever than that if you want to win this one.
Yeah.
You know, if only the Federation had some type of sneaky, underhanded section of its government that would fight that way or think that way.
If only that section
if
existed.
Only. Hey, you know, Halloween's on the 31st.
Halloween was on the 31st.
Never mind. Just thinking in the future. And speaking of the past, getting a little back onto the history thing. So Robert Hewitt Wolf based the depiction of Cardassia on the Weimar Republic from between World War One and Two of Germany, you know, with how, you know, that parallel, you know, what we talked about, how we're projecting the show in the future, and they were actually looking back into the past to kind of, you know where I'm going with that thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing things with my hands, but you guys can't see it because I'm going one hand like in the future and one hand in the past, and this is not a video medium, so I am wasting all this effort.
but it's appreciated just the same. So they did a Cardad exit.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff in this one. My only issue with this, really, and it's not an issue, it is a very much a nitpick, is that now that Alexander Siddig knows he's playing a changeling, his performance isn't as good as when he didn't know. Because I like the idea that his changeling impersonator was good enough to fool everyone.
Yeah, because now he's just saying things that are, like, really a little off. Like, hey, you know, those darts are coming in. And Miles is like, darts? You're talking about darts right now?
Yeah.
Life does go on.
And that's just, it is a nitpick, because now that we know he's a changeling, he obviously gets to twirl his mustache a little bit. But I liked it better when he didn't differentiate his performance.
Well, yeah,
the further we got into this episode, the more he acted like a personality-less drone.
Yeah, and I didn't like that, because he's done. I mean, I know the actor didn't know that's what has happened, but to make it tie in with the previous three episodes, he would just have to play Bashir as he normally plays Bashir, apart from he's up to stuff that he shouldn't be up to.
Up to no good.
Yeah, so but I think I am nitpicking, because in every other respect, this was just fantastic. This was a magnificent episode, a magnificent two-parter. It changes the landscape of the show in a very convincing and realistic way. It doesn't feel like they've just reformatted the show because ratings are down or whatever. They've really done a good job of building to this and then doing this heel turn in such a way that feels believable. Everybody's on their A game in this one.
Yeah, and I think that's, to me, that's one of the keys going forward here. And this is first time viewing or looking back on it. And the big advantage you have looking back is just, you know, how much time is left. This slightly less than 2.5 seasons left, but we have our relationship with Gul Dukat, which has been always questionable, but there's always been an uneasy peace that we've had to navigate with him I'm talking as if we're the crew of the DS9, but whatever the case may be, they've always had this uneasy peace that they've tried to maintain with him, and a very, very uneasy alliance that they had going. And it's like, you know what, we're gonna drop all pretense now with, you know, as we're starting to ramp up towards what will be the sustained climax of this series over the last two seasons, and we're gonna just create, you know, set him up as the primary villain, you know, no questions asked anymore. We're gonna do it in a creative way and a believable way. So I just think it's just tremendous.
It's absolutely wonderful stuff, and it's another example of just Deep Space Nine doing stuff that the other shows wouldn't or didn't do.
I think it's doing stuff that Gene Roddenberry wouldn't let them do.
Yeah, I think there is a certain part of that. I think this show would not be produced had Roddenberry still been alive, or certainly not this, not the show that we've got. But by the same token, after this we got Voyager, which, you know, I've talked about Voyager before, but my personal opinion of whether you like that show or don't like that show, it was very safe. And I think Deep Space Nine is the opposite of safe.
Yes, it's so safe you wouldn't believe it. Don't show my teeth anymore.
It's of them all, it's the one that holds up the best in the modern TV landscape of binge watching and not just adhering to the status quo for the entire run of the show, but making daring choices with the characters and the relationships and the story. And I think that's why Deep Space Nine has been discovered more on Netflix than the other series.
And I think it's one of the earliest series, period, not Star Trek series, just series, to go with the continuing ongoing narrative as opposed to episodic TV. You know, there are, you know, many, many examples since then. But before this, I think you have a tough time coming up with a lot.
But also, I think where it really scores, where it really does very well, is it's not one of those shows where if the overall narrative of the season is dull, then the season doesn't work. And you just, like with Supernatural last season, I was just itching for certain aspects of that overall storyline to just go away. And the standalone episodes I very much enjoyed. They do a really good job of balancing the ongoing mythology with episodes that you can just dip in and out of.
Well, this show had an ongoing narrative for the show, as opposed to what's become in vogue a little bit of late, which is an ongoing narrative for a season, which gets resolved at the end of the season, and the next season we start a new ongoing narrative.
Yeah, this plot line here will run now to the end of the show at the end of season 7, won't it?
In its own way, this is more akin to Lost or Breaking Bad or
Babylon 5.
Yeah,
Yeah. but because it has a series narrative. The season narrative, you know, Flash, I think, is a prime example of that. Or actually virtually every one of those DC superhero series is an example of that. I'm even thinking, early on, some of these earlier shows that became so big and would be actually a contemporary of this would be The Sopranos. If you remember, that kind of had an overall arc to it, but each season kind of had a primary antagonist to go against our villainous protagonist. So this is a little different from what we were getting from most other shows. Babylon 5 was contemporary to this, so I'm not going to try and say this is the only show that did it. But I don't think you can come up with very, very many shows that were either contemporary with this or before it that had that full ongoing narrative.
X-Files would be the only other one that would stand out, and even that was a little scattered. By the end of the series.
And I was never an X-Files fan, so you have to forgive my naivete if I'm wrong.
Yeah, they would have standalone episodes, Mythos episodes, they would go back and forth.
But also, X-Files never had a true resolution, is my understanding at least.
Not a good resolution, but they've had a resolution since then.
Well, is that resolution in the movies, or is that resolution in the recent rebooting of the show?
I thought the series
ended with no resolution.
For the most part,
the original.
The original series ended with very little to no resolution.
Whereas, again, just shows that I've cited, Lost and Breaking Bad, whether you like the ending of Lost or not, and I can't imagine anybody that likes the ending of Breaking Bad.
I just started to watch Breaking Bad.
Well, I'm not giving away any. All I'm going to say is it resolved at the end. In fact, I'm off on that tangent. Breaking Bad had the best series resolution I think I've ever seen. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I it was very satisfying when it ended.
My wife and I have seen it, and we're only on episode 3, the first season. So.
It's so good. It's a great, great show. But this is not a Breaking Bad podcast. But those series had a true arc over the course of the series and ended with a resolution that there was no point in going any further with it because the show was resolved now. And that's an interesting thing. And I think, Andy, was it you that was talking about that on a podcast that I was listening to recently about how in England it was not uncommon for them to end a series or storyline, talking comics or whatever?
Yeah.
England and other countries. But in the United States, we just expect everything to continue forever.
Yeah. European comics, television, what have you, has a history of the story ends. It comes to an ending. A lot of television shows, 70s, 80s, whatever, from Tenko to Blake 7 to all of that stuff, have last episodes. Whereas the syndication model for American television meant that they didn't do that. Things just went into perpetual rerun. And I think what we're seeing at the moment it's taken a couple of years, but with the influx of manga into the American comics market, you're now having a generation of readers that have grown up wanting stories to complete. And I think that's why the superhero model of comic book isn't doing as well in the marketplace as some of the Image books.
I don't necessarily disagree.
Yeah.
But I've grown up in that, and I'm old and crotchety at this point. So I'm always looking for a sequel. When DS9 ended, which obviously we're a ways away from that yet, but when DS9 ended, it had a resolution, which we will discuss more in a couple of years when we get to it. But I still sit there and say, oh, I'd like to see what happened to the characters since then.
Did you never read the season 8 novels? Did you never go into that?
No, right. I never did. I probably should.
The season 8 novels? You mean the we could talk about that later. I mean, because I've read some of the stuff that happens after. There was a few books, but I haven't read those in over a decade or more. Been a while.
Wow, we're old.
But my whole point, and I am the oldest of the old, but my point is just that this episode, just to try and bring it back again, this episode kind of sets us up for the eventual resolution now in a way that we hadn't had to this point in the series. And I guess to realize that, you have to have the hindsight of having already seen the whole series. But this is a keystone episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you were watching this fresh and had never seen what goes on after it, I'm not sure if you would quite realize that yet.
And it's earned, is the thing. This has been building for 5 seasons. They've put the players on the board. So when you get to these 2 episodes, everything pays off in a huge dividend. And moving forward, it takes these characters further and further than you thought you'd go with them.
And you know what? In putting together one of the pivotal episodes of the series, which I'm sure they knew it when they were writing it, that this is, you know, we're setting things up for the balance of what we're going to do on this series. I think it's interesting that two of the key components in it are people who, to some extent, have been just supporting players to this point, Gul Dukat and Garrick.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the writers knew the gold that they had with those two. The only one I'm surprised that didn't have some sort of role in this is Louise Fletcher, because you would just think that, you know, she's also another one who's, you know, not a main character, but she's just been so great every time she's been on screen that you'd think somehow they'd find a way to squeeze her into this, maybe make it a three-parter somehow. I don't know. And I'm not complaining about anything about this episode, but I'm just saying, you know, she's the only other one who's been so, so key whenever she gets on screen. And it's, you know, thinking about it, it would be cool if she had just something to say in this one.
Yeah, I also think there's certainly an element at play that whilst they possibly didn't know for definite they were going to end at season 7, I think that had been put in place by Next Generation, and they certainly had an inclination that that's where they were going to end. No, I was just going to say that's helped them in being able to plan exactly when this turnabout's going to happen, like towards the end of season 5.
I wonder if they had thoughts that this series would eventually go to the big screen like TNG was.
No. The companion says they never were under any illusions Deep Space Nine was going to progress to the big screen.
I would have liked when they were doing, you know, once this was done, I would have liked if they just did a little bit more with using some of these characters in the TNG movies.
Hmm.
Just you know, weave them in a little bit. But they didn't do that.
No. Yeah, because Janeway gets an appearance in one of the films, doesn't she? And she was a shit captain.
How you really feel.
Yeah, why could we not have had a Rachel Garrett TV show?
A what?
What?
Enterprise C. Rachel Garrett was captain of Enterprise C.
I'm like, what?
That would have been great.
I thought you said Rachel Garrick. I'm like,
that's what I thought too.
Rachel Garrick.
Garrick's other daughter.
That's who Garrick goes out at night. You know,
she was the captain of the Bloody Sea.
It was a bloody sea by the end of it.
It was.
Mm. I mean, there's other great little moments in this episode. There's lines of dialogue that are just wonderful. There's Kira. I've already mentioned Kira's the next time I see him, I'm going to kill him. But her line about, I wouldn't believe your father if he said rain was wet, mm-hmm. is an absolutely brilliant line. There's lots of little touches throughout the entire episode that I really like. I love Sisko at the end of the episode. There is no hesitation to him when the minute that he figures out that Bashir is a changeling, it's
destroy the Yukon.
Yep. Blow that
which up. I initially had a little problem with that, but then I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, the changeling pretty much would have killed the crew anyway. They would.
And you see them lying on the deck behind.
Yeah,
you.
Yeah. But Sisko, I guess, is making the assumption that the crew is probably already dead already.
So. Or he's, as a captain, he's weighing up the needs of the many.
Yeah,
right.
You've got
right.
9 people here versus this fleet. Everybody on DS9, Bajor. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to weigh that.
Which kind of brings me. I want to make a observation and a nitpick. So this is the payoff of Sisko's, one of his visions from Rapture.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, I'd forgotten that.
That they come through like locusts and they pass over Bajor. And his whole point was, well, you know, we can't join the Federation because, you know, basically the Dominion would have attacked. But Gul Dukat's going to destroy them and the Dominion's going to destroy them anyway by blowing up the sun. So really, maybe they should have just joined the Federation anyway. But yeah, that's a nitpick.
But he
Doctor Nitpick.
He didn't in the end.
Well, okay. All right. You got me there. That's true.
Speaking of great moments, I do want to put one on the table where Worf has just come back and Bashir's taking him back to Med Bay, and he looks at Garrick and goes, Garrick, good job. And you know that speaks volumes between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And those actors nail it. Michael Dorn as Worf is not a subtle character actor. I mean, he's done other stuff, well, but he is a lot
Worf's
more.
Worf's not a subtle character.
It's not a character, yeah. But that had a lot more subtlety than I'm used to, and it was well played by both those actors.
Mm.
There's not a weak performance in this episode, except
for
faux Bashir, but then you have Bashir acting badass when he's in the internment camp.
Yeah, I think that's what I meant when it was just a nitpick. It's an acting choice that either Siddig made or the director told him to play it as, because oft times it isn't the actor's choice per se.
I think it's how it was written.
Yeah, I think it was a misstep.
I mean, maybe they were trying to go with the fact that maybe the changeling is doesn't feel that they need to act as Bashir really anymore because the plan's coming to fruition. He's almost done. Well, you know what? He was going to die anyway. I just realized that. He was going to fly into the sun and blow that up regardless. Mm-hmm. He was on a suicide mission.
Yeah. I think they stopped giving him lines. And that's why he was just kind of like silent and stoic. You know,
well, not even
he had to do all his acting through how he was moving around. And I think that was a mistake. I think they should have given him a little bit more of a Bashir because he didn't know that the cat was out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna add a new thing to our show, if you guys will let me.
No.
Okay. I want to add in my favorite quote of the episode. So I was thinking about that yesterday. I'd just like to start because there's always so many good quotes. I actually have two for this one. My first is Garrick's line of, after all, a verse about the Cardassian who panicked in the face of danger would ruin General Martok's song. Now, if you excuse me, my dungeon awaits. And the other line that I thought should have consideration for the best line of the episode is, I yield. I cannot defeat this Klingon. All I can do is kill him, and that no longer holds my interest. I don't know which is the best line, but I think it's one of those two.
What? You don't want to have, for all we know, the Vorta could be gluttonous, alcoholic sex maniacs is the best line?
That is a good line. My favorite is still Kira's, I wouldn't believe your dad if he said rain was wet. That's my favorite of the episode.
I think for me it was Dukat. He's like, it never felt right us working together, did it? And he's right, and all of a sudden you realize, damn it, it's been there the whole time. It's not that it didn't feel right, it wasn't right.
And the fact that all four of us can come up with different great lines from this episode shows how great this episode is.
Yeah. Well, if we keep this as an ongoing part of our show, we'll see if some of the episodes when they're not as good will yield good lines just the same.
I already know what my favorite one for next week is.
I know where you're going.
Oh, me and Dave have one thing on our mind. Or two.
It's not the one at the end of the show, is it?
No.
Okay.
I guess we should rate this bad boy. I don't think it's going to be a surprise.
Five.
Yeah, five.
Yeah, everyone else, just five.
Three.
Oh, bullshit.
All right, five.
Go on, Bill, bring the side down.
Bill, I didn't get a harump from you.
Oh, I was trying to think of, five something-somethings.
Five claustrophobic Cardassians.
Oh, five evaporated Jem'Hadar guards.
Is this the first one that's got fives across the board?
No. I thought last episode did.
Oh, did it? Right. Okay.
Yes, last episode, this is two fives all across the board. Trials and Tribulations was also all fives this season.
Right. Okay. That's
fine. Let me see. Last season, there were no fives across the board. Season before that, no.
I can already see a couple of other episodes in this season alone that I'm going to give fives to.
Yeah.
There have been no other five across the boards before this season. Duet, I only gave 4.5 to Duet, I'm sorry. That was close.
Mm. Okay.
How can we not bring up the Breen in the room?
That was a cool moment. But it was a little deus ex machina there too, though.
But did we mention how much the Breen looks like Boosh from Return of the Jedi?
Oh, yeah.
I think we did the last time Breen showed up, yeah.
I couldn't remember, but I got one more plot contrivance. That has to be the most observant Jem'Hadar guard in the Jem'Hadar. I am sorry. Look, he figures out by picking up this one prison shank / multi-tool that I believe if we move this bed out of the way and pop this panel off, like, really, dude? Really, you should be leading the Jem'Hadar guard. Get Itadaka out of there and put this guy in charge. Although, but he didn't last long anyway, but still. Yeah.
He makes up for the fact that the Jem'Hadar jail has no security video cameras.
Yeah, where's Garrick? I don't know. Like, don't you know? Aren't you watching us?
Isn't it standard for prisons in our era to have CCTV everywhere?
Something, yeah.
But the Jem'Hadar, I don't give a shit about that.
I mean, where they can't put some little tracker subcutaneous, under the skin tracker just to track where you are. I don't know, scanners, sensors, something. Where's Garrick?
He was here a minute ago.
Did you Cardassian? What's that? I don't know. We're all fine here. Fine. Minor gas.
How are you?
Who is this?
What's your number?
Okay.
So, what does Blaine say? Bill?
Blaine says, turn and read the email. Blaine says.
Blaine says, hi, guys. They did so much right in this episode. Bashir's praise of Garak as being a man with many talents. The Jem'Hadar realizing he cannot defeat Worf, only kill him. The changeling plan to destroy the sun, although we would have had a changeling ham another for the second time with Odo dead. Changeling harm another. Excuse me.
Ham. I was like,
I was like, what the hell? That's inside my glass.
Wow, you can make, if you had a changeling,
ability changeling ham.
I was just thinking, I can make it turn into anything I want to eat.
Quark's business prospects. Dukat promising to make Cardassia great again. I mean, strong again. The reason Garak was forced to stay behind. I particularly enjoyed the way they handled Worf in combat. There were too many times in the past where they tried to establish someone as a physical threat by having him or her beat up Worf, to the point where Worf lost most of the fights he was in. So it ultimately seemed less impressive to beat him. This time they built him up naturally and showed us that he'd earned the respect of all of his opponents before the last one chose to yield. Worf's loss in combat finally felt earned and important. Blaine. Also, just another thought from me on that is, Worf wasn't diminished by being beaten in that last one because his body had already taken so much punishment that you got to think it would have been a much, much closer fight had he been fresh as the Jem'Hadar was. So it's, you can't even say, oh, this Jem'Hadar is a better fighter than Worf. Worf had already, you know, he had broken ribs and stuff.
Yeah, he was near death. They're like, if you don't stop, you're going to die.
But I'm talking about before that fight started, Worf had already taken a beating in the other fights he had won.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So his body was not, he was not entering that final battle at peak physical condition, but the Jem'Hadar was. So there was an advantage there.
He was kind of like Mickey Rourke and the Wrestler.
Okay, we can make that connection.
Yeah. For those that have seen
that's
the Wrestler.
That's what Blaine said. All right, and I guess that's it for By Inferno's Light. Do we have any other email we might want to read?
We should, Faith Gilliam.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's pretty on topic.
Stay on topic.
Andy, you want to read it? You didn't do the synopsis this time. It's in your contract.
Yeah, that loophole again. All right, okay. Our email today is from Faith Gilliam.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. You're all just sitting there waiting for me to read it again. No? I just read Blaine's.
What are you? I'm not the email guy. I just sing the song.
I'm not the email guy.
Dave, I don't like it when mom and dad fight. Dave!
Bill's version of it's not in my contract. I'm not the email guy.
Is that a Jim Curry film? Okay, In Purgatory Shadow by Inferno's Light. Hey, Faith. Hey, Niners. This two-part set is a favorite of mine, and I often return to it for rewatches. Garak and Worf's interactions are rare and yet golden every time. We finally get to learn about the real Martok. I think he's such a good example of what a Klingon should be, a warrior with a strong sense of duty and honor who also knows how to have fun, revel in the moment, and understanding that everyone is going to have the same code as you do. He's a great mentor for Worf. The big reveal about Garak being Tain's son was so shocking the first time I watched the series. After that, I just think, of course he is. Garak having a phobia was a new twist and an already complex character as well. Each character is at their best in this episode and is such a random team to throw together, but they all find their strengths and run with it. I also love that at least some of the Jem'Hadar do have their own sense of honour. Some episodes really highlight this and some just make them almost drones to the Vorta. I also noted that the Vorta really don't care about anything, not their own people, not their prisoners, and not honour. They only care about the Founders. It is a strong characterization that never disappoints. Bashir gets to shine in this episode, playing two different characters, and even though his changeling performance gets a bit predictable in its sneakiness, it was fun to watch. I thought he pulled it off well. Anyway, the pacing is great, the acting is wonderful, and the story is also great. And yeah, Dukat is a sleazeball. Again. Until next time, Faith Gilliam. But it sounds like Faith would give it a 5 as well.
Yeah, pretty much on the same page with us.
One of 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no disagreements though, Faith. I think we're in total agreement with everything you said, though. Yep.
Where was Odo?
He was around. Missing.
It just hit me how good this episode is that you don't realize a character is missing.
I don't know that. Is he missing? Doesn't he have one scene? Or am I mixing the two episodes in my head?
I think he's around. I think, but I don't know if he's got a scene of his own.
I read something that in one of these two episodes we're covering, Odo is not even, he's mentioned, but not even in it.
All right, so maybe he's not. He is in the second one.
Yes, he is, because they mention when they're on the balcony, they're going, Doctor, Doctor.
Yeah. For people behind the curtain, we watched two episodes and record them together, and we're mixing up with the next one. But yes, I do believe Odo is not in this episode.
Did not notice it until just now.
That's how good the episode is.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Odo, the Counselor Troy of Deep Space Nine. You don't even miss him when he's not.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, Jake was not in this. It says, Odo and Jake are not, do not appear in this episode.
Well, Jake's not been around for a while, I don't
think. I was going to say, boy, the episode really just dropped so much for the lack of Jake.
Well, it just shows that they knew that they didn't have to shoehorn every character into this.
Mm-hmm.
But all the characters they did put on the table all got something relevant to do and were performed masterfully.
What are we going to do? We don't have a Jake moment.
Yeah. Well, you going to bring your rating down, Paul?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe down to a 4.5.
4.9999999999.
He's the Kid Flash of the show. He's nice when he's there, but you don't miss him when he's not.
What are you busting on Wally for?
He does not detract from the show. He's not Wesley Crusher.
What did Wally do to his hair?
Wally was much better in Legends of Tomorrow, dude. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, he was. He's much better over there.
So what are we doing next time?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Dr. Bashir, I presume.
They chose him for a reason.
A holographic doctor can replace a starship's medical officer.
They thought they were getting the very best.
I'm here to make you immortal.
But for Bashir to become the doctor of the future.
You brought my parents to this station against my explicit wishes.
His darkest secret.
My whole career could be destroyed.
Must remain buried in his past.
Well, what about us? We could go to prison.
Star Trek Voyager's Robert Picardo guest stars on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Sorry.
And see you all then.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
And just so to nobody's surprise, Florida Man was responsible.
Excuse me.
We've killed Andy. Florida Man strikes again.
Well, I'm not from Florida. I just
Florida Man does
he's not
whatever
from Florida,
Florida
he just
can.
Ruins it now.
Ben will be Florida Man so someday. Right now he's just Florida Boy. So.
He's Florida Man's sidekick.
Florida Lad.